It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
Maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it. It was 10 years ago yesterday that Jerry the King Lawler went into cardiac arrest on Monday Night Raw, and his heart stopped beating for 22 minutes before he was revived. That was the same night that he and Randy Orton wrestled CM Punk and Dolph Ziggler. 10 years later, and CM Punk may have killed something else. His career. I'm going to put a little red bow on this whole AEW clown show this week. All the details, everything we know so far, all these details and stories have been changing and shifting all week long. We'll talk about what we know so far and what I think Tony Khan needs to do if he wants to show that he is a real leader. We've got the Young Bucks reportedly sending feelers to WWE, thinking about a possible jump when their AEW deals are done. Or are they? Could there be something else going on here? Got the latest on Malakai Black leaving AEW, Pat McAfee leaving SmackDown, Velveteen Dream leaving his phone in the bathroom to record people taking a piss. What the hell is going on here? Plus, it's been 1 year since the NXT relaunch, and I've got my NXT report card. I'm going to grade 2.0. This is episode 773 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, September 11th, 2022. I am the Solomon Star. You want to hear some really crazy stories from someone who worked for Vince McMahon for 15 years, starting from the Attitude Era? You need to download the new Brian Gewirtz audiobook. It's a good thing I've got a link for you to get it for free when you sign up for free for the first 30 days, audibletrial.com/solomonster. You can get that and the Jon Moxley audiobook free if you are an Amazon Prime member. You get 2 free books if you're signed up with Prime. Otherwise, you just get the one. So decide which one you want and go to audibletrial.com/solomonster to sign up. I want to say thank you to all of our PayPal producers this week. Showing the love. Showing the love for the Sound Off. I love it. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout out here on the show. Hey, powerhouse Pamela Brown, bringing it this week. Thank you very much. Very much appreciated. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, truly one of the nicest people I have ever met on this platform and interacted with. One of the longtime fans of the show. He is going to be at Monday Night Raw in Portland tomorrow night. He is bringing a Sound Off sign. He's got another sign, which is very cool. I don't want to say anything in case it gets on camera. I'll be keeping an eye out for that. So, Paul, thank you very much. Night Stalker, Nayef Al-Safar. Big B, Brian Becerra. Killshot, Keith Hart. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. John Raging Mad Riffle, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Left Hook, Luke Hyams, Shin Superkick Akuma, we got the best, Christian Ortiz, Iowan Corn Farmer, Jesse Lampier, Oscar, gotta talk about Oscar, Ufman Fernandez, who is celebrating 41 years on this earth today. It is also his first birthday since losing his dad. He loved listening to the Sound Off and would laugh, he says, whenever I would cuss. That's awesome. He must have been laughing a lot. I am very sorry for your loss, though, but I will say that he helped raise a fine young man. I wish you a very happy birthday, many more to come, and thank you again for all of your help in the live chats every week. Everybody who joins us on YouTube knows who Ufman is. He's one of our wrenches. He's one of our mods. And as he said at the end of his note here, just remember, it's just wrestling, bro. It's just wrestling. Also, Rick from South Carolina is sending a shout out to his sister, Carrie, who celebrated her birthday back on September 3rd. She got married in April, used to be a big wrestling fan, and he has been trying to get her back into it along with her husband, his brother-in-law. Hey, tell them the old man is gone and his son-in-law is in charge now. It's safe to come back. You know, we just passed 1,000 ratings in Spotify. I don't usually mention this enough, but we're just shy of a full 5-star rating on Spotify. So if you can, please drop a star rating on there for the podcast. That will also help out the show immensely. This was the most newsworthy and also the most embarrassing week in AEW history. 1 week ago, we were coming off an excellent Clash at the Castle pay-per-view. We had NXT Worlds Collide, which got almost completely overshadowed in the noise of everything that ended up happening. And then we had AEW All Out, which has become basically like their WrestleMania every year. I think if you were to classify these four pay-per-views that they have every year, Double or Nothing is a big show too, but I think All Out, if you had to say which one is sort of like their WrestleMania, that would be All Out in Chicago. Now, last year we had the in-ring debut of CM Punk. We had the debut of Bryan Danielson. We had the debut of Adam Cole. We had some great matches on the show. I think, well, that might have been where we had the cage match between the Bucks and the Lucha Bros, if I'm remembering. So it's a great night for AEW. Very positive night. Everybody was talking about them. It was largely positive. It's amazing how much of a difference a year can make. 1 year after CM Punk arrived, he could very well be on his way out the door. He walked out there at the First Dance in Chicago a hero. And now he walks out as the villain. We got our heel turn, but it wasn't the heel turn that we were expecting. 15 matches and 5 hours later, the new AEW World Champion, who should have been on top of the world, right? Went through rehab for a terribly painful injury. He broke his foot, and this was a severe break. Came back from the broken foot. He's in the main event of this pay-per-view in his hometown of Chicago. His dog is there. His dog is in the back. He's the new world champion. He sits down at the post-show scrum right next to his boss. And he decided now would be a good time to go on a rant about Colt Cabana and the EVPs of this company. He went scorched earth on all of them. Nobody was talking about the return of MJF when this was over. It was all about CM Punk. And it was designed that way. He walked into that room with an agenda. He walked into that room like a ticking time bomb. You know, people talk about the pipe bomb. This wasn't a pipe bomb. This was a time bomb waiting to explode. Nobody brought up the name Colt Cabana or Scott Colton. He went into that room. He spotted Nick Houseman of WrestleZone. He knew that Nick and Colt had a friendship. They had done improv together many years ago. He figured they were still friends. And who knows? And maybe he was one of the media people that was stooging him off and spreading lies about him. So he honed in on Nick Houseman. And when Nick told him, in fact, that I'm not friends anymore with Cabana, we don't see eye to eye. We haven't been friends in a while. Punk said, oh, you blew my spot. And he went on his rant anyway. And he talked about lawsuits, he talked about emails, Colt sharing a checking account with his mother, EVPs who couldn't manage a fucking Target, spreading lies about him and talking behind his back about stuff they know nothing about, leaking stuff to the media. He went off on the empty-headed fucking dumb fuck, Hangman Adam Page, going out on national television in May and going into business for himself. And how people like him haven't done a damn thing in the wrestling business. He says this about a former AEW world champion who, at last year's Full Gear pay-per-view in the main event with Kenny Omega, drew more on pay-per-view than CM Punk just did with Jon Moxley in the main event of All Out. He was lashing out because he felt lies were being spread about him, getting Colt Cabana fired. He was lashing out because Adam Page, in a fan Q&A a few months ago, said that he doesn't need to take advice from veterans in the company like Sting and CM Punk. He helped build this company with his friends. He's been a world champion already. He'll listen to what they have to say, but he doesn't necessarily use other people's advice. Which, admittedly, is a pretty stupid thing to say. Especially when you have a wealth of experience behind the scenes in that company, even if that's the way you feel, that is a pretty stupid thing to say. But what should have been a positive night for AEW turned into their biggest star burying the entire promotion that he now represents as champion, or did. All while Tony Khan sat not 5 feet away making funny faces, apparently powerless to do anything about it. Apparently there was nothing he could do. It is not a work, although that is not going to stop people from thinking that it is. Everything is a work to these people. These are the people who still believe that Cody Rhodes leaving AEW was a work. Part of some nefarious plot, I guess, to infiltrate WWE and take it down from the inside. He's a mole on the inside of the company. I guess after Cody wins the WWE title next year, he'll show up on Dynamite and have Jon Moxley bleed all over the belt. It is not a work. It is a disgrace. What happened last Sunday was a disgrace. Long before CM Punk went back to his dressing room and all hell broke loose. That only made things worse. It was already a disgrace. We just watched CM Punk win the AEW World title. And we watched the Elite become the first ever Trios Tag Team Champions. Tony Khan waited months to debut these belts, specifically waiting so that Kenny Omega could come back and he and the Bucks could take those titles. We saw this happen on the pay-per-view, and by Wednesday, it's like it never even happened. It's like that little mind racing device from Men in Black. There are people who paid $50 to watch those two matches on that show, and on Dynamite, they completely undid everything that happened. They never even mentioned the name CM Punk or Kenny Omega or the Young Bucks. So not only did they take the titles away from them and announce plans to crown new champions, but if you're not somebody who follows along with every little thing that happens and you're on social media and you're going to the dirt sheets or the wrestling news websites or what have you, you would have absolutely no idea what's going on. None. They took Punk and the Elite out of the intro to the show. It's like they erased them from history. All because a fight broke out in the back while the media scrum was still in progress. Tony Khan was sitting with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. You have a security guy flying out of the room because something is happening backstage. These two guys are out there. They're trying to talk about their fantastic match with the Acclaimed. Something else that was overshadowed by all of this nonsense was we got a great tag team championship match. Tony Khan didn't know what was happening until after it was over, and Chris Jericho could be seen when he was leaving the scrum telling him, hey, some shit went down. Tony was sitting there raving about WWE not being nice to him because they booked two shows last weekend, his weekend, Labor Day weekend, and how now he knows how Jim Crockett felt and he's not going to sit back and take this shit anymore. He's saying this at the exact same moment that his locker room mere feet away is falling apart. You know, there have been lots of stories about what happened from the Punk camp, stories from the Elite camp, and somewhere in the middle lies the truth. Nobody is talking because this is now a legal matter. I hope somebody tells the judge that it's all just the work. I'd hate for him or her not to be in on it. After all, it's a work. One version of the story had the Young Bucks kicking the door in to Punk's locker room to confront him, which even the Punk side now denies. They didn't kick the door down. They just got into the room very quickly. You know, I wonder if they did kick the door down, did they slap their legs before they kicked the door down? Because if they did, that should have given CM Punk a heads up before they barged in. So they either came in with AEW's chief legal officer or she was already in the room. But the belief is that she was there. She was present for all of this. She was a witness to all of this. So it would not have been very bright of the Bucks to be kicking any doors in or throwing punches once they got inside if they knew that she was there. Then again, I just talked last week about the cops watching the Velveteen Dream in his car snorting cocaine right in front of the cops. There are a lot of really stupid people in this world. So anything's possible. The belief is that Punk threw the first punch, several punches, in fact, at Matt Jackson. That seems to be one detail from these stories that's pretty consistent, is that Punk threw the first punch. And that becomes key, because whether he did or not, you know, they're going to investigate that. Who instigated this? Who threw the first punch? Who's the first person who got physical? Yes, the Bucks maybe went to go confront him because he told people in the presser that, you know, if you got a problem with me, then come talk to me. So yes, they went to his locker room, but who got physical first? Who threw the first punch? That's going to be a key detail in all this. And that's what the investigation is for. They've hired an independent firm to investigate exactly what the hell happened in that room. There are going to be taping video interviews, if they haven't already, with everybody who was present. Punk's friend, Ace Steele. And by the way, MJF is apparently one of those names who witnessed the entire thing. But Punk's friend, Ace Steele, he was there, as was Steele's wife, who had a broken foot. Maybe it was contagious and she caught it from Punk. But she was said to be there taking care of Punk's dog, Larry, who he brought to the show with him since they were in Chicago. Steele got involved in the fight, the husband, not the wife, and allegedly threw a chair that hit Nick Jackson in the eye. We don't know if he was just protecting his friend, if he was protecting his wife, or both, or he just lost his cool. But he threw a chair, and then later is said to have bit Kenny Omega on the arm and pulled his hair. I laugh at the fact that we had a dog in the room, but it's not the dog who bit this man on the arm. It was another human being. Other versions of this. And by the way, on that detail about him biting Omega, it may have been because he thought Omega was trying to choke him or put him in a crossface, whatever his warped logic is in biting Kenny Omega. Other versions of this have Omega not fighting anyone, but trying to get Larry the dog out of the room so that he wouldn't get hurt. If Hangman had not already left the building, guarantee you he would have been suspended too. We wouldn't have seen him on TV this week because I am sure that he would have marched right in there with Omega and the Bucks. He was eviscerated every bit as badly, if not worse, during that media scrum than Omega and the Bucks. So for his own sake, he's lucky that he had already left the building. Everybody who was there is said to have been suspended, which would include Punk, Steele, Omega, the Bucks, Pat Buck, no relation, Christopher Daniels, Brandon Cutler, and Michael Nakazawa. And that is not unusual given the circumstances to suspend everybody who was there, not because they're all necessarily guilty of anything, but you suspend them or you send them home and then you investigate things. And if they're cleared of any wrongdoing, then you bring them back. It's possible people like Daniels and Pat Buck were just trying to break things up. I would hope that's the case, given that they are in producer positions and or executive type positions behind the scenes in that company. They should know better than to get involved unless they were just trying to break this stuff up. What we know is that Punk suffered a torn triceps, not during the brawl, but he suffered it 5 minutes into his match with Jon Moxley. This is according to The Observer. Not AEW, because AEW hasn't said a word officially about any of this. All of this information is coming second and third hand. AEW is tight-lipped. They're saying nothing about any of this, about the fight, about any possible suspensions, about a Punk injury. They have said nothing. But the injury happened on the tope out to the floor. And if you go back, you could see Punk favoring his arm or his elbow for the rest of the match. He's already had surgery, supposedly, and is looking at an even longer layoff than the one he just came back from the broken foot. 6 months at a minimum. Could be as long as 9 months. That gives AEW some cover now. Maybe in their mind, oh, cooler heads prevail. Punk goes away for 9 months, things die down, he comes back, makes amends. I think that would be terrible. Just because he's hurt and he is off television does not mean that he still should not face some kind of punishment for what he did. Otherwise, what kind of message does that send? Which begs the question, what does Tony Khan do? Suspensions were a given here. You can't have Eddie Kingston suspended for a lot less, which he was a few weeks ago. He got suspended for a lot less than what happened here. You can't suspend him and not at the very least suspend the people involved here. Can't do that. You can't suspend Eddie Kingston for pie-facing somebody and then 2 weeks later have a fucking brawl for all backstage and not suspend anybody for it. So at the very least, suspensions had to come out of this. But this is going to be the greatest test of Tony Khan as a leader in the 3+ years of AEW's existence. This is going to show what kind of leader he truly is. This will be the most important decision that he has ever made. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that because The decision he makes here could have implications on whether or not CM Punk, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks are even back in AEW. And I think Omega will be. I'm thinking more in terms of the Bucks and even more in terms of CM Punk. This is going to be the most important decision that Tony Khan makes. He's not going to do anything until the investigation is complete. That could take weeks. And it doesn't mean we'll ever know the results because they're keeping all of this internal, although if anybody gets fired, then, you know, we'll know. There could be lawsuits out of this. This could get very, very ugly. If the things about Ace Steel are true, then he cannot be there anymore. He's got to go. You throw a chair at someone's head, let alone one of the EVPs of the company, and you bite somebody. You throw a chair at one EVP, and you bite another EVP. You're a producer for this company. You're supposed to be the person who de-escalates the situation like this, not adds to it. If this is true, then he's got to go. He'll be the first one to fall. Then there's CM Punk. Now it becomes a little bit harder to figure out what do you do here. Although I don't think it should be hard at all. He's the one who got this whole shitstorm started. I don't care if everything he said in that press conference could be 100% true, and we don't know that it is. Even if it was 100% true and the Bucks were being these back-channeling, sniveling little shits behind the scenes, spreading lies and rumors about the guy, and you just want to punch them right in the face, right? All of that could be true. It doesn't matter. He's the one who got this whole shitstorm started. There is a time and a place for everything. This was neither the time nor the place. Even before the first punch was thrown, he should have been gone. Last Sunday should be the final time we see CM Punk in an AEW ring. I mean, at the very least, it should be the final time we see him having anything to do with the world championship. This guy's made of fucking glass. But that should be the final time we see him in an AEW ring. I don't see how Tony Khan can keep him or Ace Steel around after what happened here. The heat on them is said to be off the charts, especially on Ace Steel, but on Punk too. What Punk did was completely embarrassing. And at this point, he's more of a liability, I think, to this company than anything else. There's also little use keeping him around if he's going to spend most of the time he has left on his deal rehabbing from injuries. Now, I think he's done a lot of good business-wise for AEW since he came in. Tony Khan made that very clear. What was it, the double or nothing scrum? Somebody asked about Eric Bischoff's comments about Punk, and that's when Tony flipped out and he went into this passionate defense of CM Punk and how much he's meant to their pay-per-view buys and television ratings and all these different things, all these business metrics. So he's definitely done good for the company in a lot of ways. He was the number one guy that Tony Khan had on his wish list when he started AEW. He wanted Punk more than anybody else. So I'm sure that it is a very hard pill for him to swallow, the idea that he might now have to get rid of this guy. But I think it makes him look like a total lightweight if he does not take action after what this guy did last Sunday. Make an example out of him and make it very clear that this type of shit is not going to be tolerated. Whether you are the biggest star in the company or you are curtain jerking on Dark Elevation, it should not matter. He showed a total disregard for the president of the company. He sat there popping off the way he did. He kept cutting off Tony like he was some jabroni. Punk should not be back. The only question in my mind is when to do it. Because the guy did suffer an injury on the job. He finished the match, but he suffered a serious injury. He may have already undergone surgery. Maybe wait until he's more healed up, and then the two sides quietly part ways, if Tony Khan feels that he owes him that much. I don't think he owes him shit. But if that's how he feels, maybe that's the more diplomatic way to go about doing it. And we'll know pretty quickly in the next several weeks how their ratings look without CM Punk. If they stay the same, if they decline. That could have an effect on his thinking when it comes to those TV rights negotiations, which are coming up next year. Oh, wait a minute. Our ratings have really dipped since Punk has been off TV. Maybe I want to keep this guy around. I would cut bait. I don't think he's worth the headaches. Would Tony Khan want to lose his biggest star to WWE? No, of course not. So I understand why he probably is not going to fire CM Punk. Punk would absolutely go back to WWE under the right circumstances. And if you don't think so, go back and read the ESPN interview that he did after he debuted for AEW, where he admitted, in his own words, he admitted that he had discussions with WWE about possibly working together, about a possible comeback, but he said they played games. He said, the first thing I said to them when we got back together in these discussions, don't play games. And what did they do? They played games. Some things never change. So the question isn't, would CM Punk go back to WWE? The answer is yes, CM Punk would go back to WWE. But would Triple H want him? I don't think that he would be rushing to have any conversations with Mr. Brooks. I'm sure he wasn't the guy's biggest fan to begin with. We know what CM Punk thinks of Triple H. But now Triple H, he sees this. Why would he want to bring back a disgruntled former talent who is 8 years older and has now suffered back-to-back injuries requiring surgery and long layoffs? Who has no qualms about going out publicly and eviscerating his coworkers and embarrassing the president of the company? And this also ties in with the Elite, by the way. When we're talking about would Triple H bring in CM Punk, if Punk and the Elite have beef, and this is not just going to go away, he said it as much in the scrum, we're beyond apologies. So I don't even think that if Tony Khan were to get these guys in a room after all of this and say, okay, now you guys hash out your differences, based on what Punk said, it sounds like we're way beyond that. If there are irreparable issues between these three men, four men, if you want to throw Omega in there, and Triple H thinks that he might have a shot at signing any of these guys, like the Bucks, I think he is way more likely to bring in the Elite than he is CM Punk. And on that subject, there are now rumors. It's funny how this comes out after all this. And that's all they are right now, are rumors. That Matt and Nick Jackson have sent feelers to WWE that they would be interested in coming into the company when their deals are up, which would not be until 2024. So even if there's any truth to this at all, and the Bucks are interested in going to WWE, it's not as if it's anything that's going to be able to happen anytime soon. Now, this could just be a negotiating tactic for them to get more money out of AEW when their deals come due. I think it would be business malpractice for them not to. It's what Randy Orton did. Randy Orton did the exact same thing. There were rumors that Randy Orton might be interested in jumping ship and talking to Tony Khan. WWE swooped in there. They gave him a sweetheart deal to re-sign with the company, which he did because he never had any desire. He never had any thought in his head that, you know what, maybe I will jump over to AEW. He did it to get more money, because as a businessman, that is what you do. So it could just be that the Bucks are doing the same thing. Or, and I tend to fall more in this camp too, not that I don't think that's true, but it could be, this is leaking now as a message to Tony Khan, who has not yet figured out what disciplinary action he is going to take against all of these people. It could be a message to Tony Khan. If you are even thinking about firing us, if you are even thinking about stripping us of our EVP status, think again. Because we would not have any problem going over to the other side. They were very complimentary of Triple H when he first tried to sign them. They had nothing but positive things to say about Triple H. Ultimately, they decided that it wasn't a good fit for them, and they helped start up AEW. Cody went back to WWE. I don't have any doubt the Bucks would be open to going there. They could work with the New Day. They could work with the Usos. Right? They'd be a big addition to that tag team division. And Triple H would love to have them. And if they did leave, AEW would survive. AEW is not going to shrivel up and die because the Young Bucks might leave. Cody left. You could argue in some ways Cody left and all this behind-the-scenes nonsense started, but they've survived. They survived that. They would survive this. I don't think the Young Bucks leaving would be a death blow. It would hurt. There's no doubt about it that it would hurt. They helped build this company from the ground up. BTE every week on YouTube does hundreds of thousands of views. AEW would be losing that social media presence as well. If Omega wanted to leave, same thing. It would hurt. He's involved in other aspects of the company too, like the video game. It would hurt. but it would not kill them. Because you look at the talent roster that Tony Khan has assembled, there is no reason that they cannot absorb a loss like that and use it as a chance to build new talent up to take their spots. They got plenty of talent that are chomping at the bit, believe me, to take their spots, who probably aren't very happy about the amount of television time that they're getting at the moment. There are plenty of people on that roster who Tony Khan could slide in there and try to build up. But the Bucks are not blameless in this mess either. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks should be stripped of more than just their trios titles. It was never a smart idea to give EVP titles to active talent. You had to know that it would cause drama at some point. It's kind of like the idea, honestly, of Triple H right now, not only being the head of creative in WWE, but being the head of talent relations. It's a weird conflict. I can't see that going on in the long term. I just think if I worked in that company, that would be a little weird. If I had an issue creatively, or I have any kind of issue, now I want to go to, it's like having the head of HR as your boss. It just doesn't work. Having active talent as EVPs in the company doesn't seem like a very bright idea. And you had to know that it would cause drama at some point. I would strip them of those titles as well. They should have known better than to inflame the situation by barging into the guy's locker room. Even if he said, hey, come talk to me if you have a problem, whatever. Given the state of mind that he was in, they should have known better. You are EVPs. You are supposed to be held to a higher standard and have a better sense than what they showed last weekend. All that did was make a bad situation even worse. If the Bucks are leaking false stories about Punk or other people to the dirt sheets, then even more of a reason to strip them, although that becomes harder to prove. How are you going to prove that? All right, that becomes a lot harder. And I should say, we don't know that they have been leaking false information. I saw Meltzer and Alvarez say the Bucks never leaked anything about the whole Colt Cabana situation to us. Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful, he said the same thing. I never talked to them about Colt Cabana. Never came up. So did Punk have it wrong? Was it someone else? We don't know. Here's a wild idea. Maybe, just maybe, he should have confronted them about it earlier. I don't even mean that day. I just mean confront them about it earlier because this is not a new thing. I mean, this stuff has been going around for a few months now. Confront them about it earlier in a more civilized way and say, hey, are you guys saying these things about me? Do you actually believe this stuff? Because I don't know where it's coming from, but it's not true. I know he's your boy. I know you guys are tight. But I don't give a shit where he works or what he does. I never went to Tony. I never asked Tony Khan to do anything. I guarantee you all of this could have been avoided had the Bucks gone to Punk first, or if Punk went to them first when these stories first started coming out. 95% of the time these things happen because people do not talk to each other. There is a lack of communication on both sides. This all could have been avoided. If they acted like adults, this all could have been avoided. Tony Khan, he bears responsibility for this as well. The minute that CM Punk started shitting on the EVPs of his company last Sunday, he should have shut him down. And when Hangman Page made that comment on TV in the lead up to Double or Nothing, he should have talked to him then about it and dealt with the issue then. Or if Punk had a problem with it, he should have gone to Tony and say, hey, did you tell him to say that? What the hell is this? And when Tony Khan said, no, I had no idea, the first thing he should have done was go to Hangman, sit him down and say, what the hell was that about? He didn't do that. Now it's too late. You're not going to go back and retroactively punish the guy for what he did three or four months ago. So now it's too late, and you see the end result. They let the wound fester, and eventually it gets infected. Here we are. The problem is he tried to be their friend. Tony Khan has tried to be friends to all of these people, and the problem is he needs to be less of a friend and more of a leader. The man is running a $100 million business, not a fucking daycare center. 1 year ago this week, Mick Foley went on Facebook and he posted a video claiming that WWE was no longer the place for young talent to aspire to be, that they could trust AEW more than WWE to give them the opportunity to grow and succeed, that it used to be WWE, but they could no longer be trusted to do that. With all of this dysfunction behind the scenes and with the creative change at the top in WWE, here we are 1 year later, I think a lot of that young talent may be starting to see things a little bit differently now. While the children were throwing a hissy fit this week, Chris Jericho, from all accounts, was backstage acting like a leader. Bryan Danielson was acting like a leader. Jon Moxley was acting like a leader. Tony Khan is very fortunate to have those three men working for him. They led a backstage talent meeting before Dynamite on Wednesday that was said to be the best meeting they've ever had. Moxley went out on TV that night. He cut this great promo, upset over the fact that he got beat at All Out and he lost the championship like he let everybody down. And he talked up the AEW world title like it was the single most important thing in the world. And with that one promo, Moxley put this company on his back, the same way that he did when Tony Khan called on him a few months ago, the first time Punk got hurt. Those were the words of a man who meant what he said, and the words of a man who was probably very annoyed that he had to cancel his vacation plans to come back to work because people don't know how to conduct themselves like professionals. He put the focus back on where it belongs. He put the focus on the AEW World Championship. Now, the title would have been vacated anyway with Punk's injury. Now they're doing a tournament of champions with the winners of Jericho against Danielson and Moxley against Sammy Guevara this Wednesday, going to Grand Slam at Arthur Ashe Stadium in 2 weeks to crown a new AEW World Champion. They have set it up with one member of the Blackpool Combat Club taking on one member of Jericho's group in each of the semifinal matches. It should be Moxley against Danielson in the finals. That is the, I think, the biggest match they could do on that New York City show. I'm thinking Moxley wins, and MJF then, for lack of a better term, cashes in on that world title match that he earned by winning the casino ladder match. He cashes in that night. And when they go off the air in New York City, MJF will be the AEW World Champion. Now, you could do the same thing with Bryan Danielson, who's been losing, I think, way too many matches. I would rather his first title win, though, not last 5 minutes before MJF takes it from him. So my other thought is, let Danielson win the title. You know, Moxley won their first match back at Revolution earlier this year. Danielson wins this one. Gets to hold the title for a couple of months. And then drops it to MJF at Full Gear. They also announced a rematch for Grand Slam with the Acclaimed challenging Swerve and Our Glory for the tag team titles. That has to be a title change. Death Triangle, they are the new trio's champions. They beat Best Friends to win the vacant belts on Wednesday. That makes Pac the first double champion in AEW history. I like it. They are a natural fit for those titles. Unfortunately, they have one less trio to face off with now. And I'm not talking about the Elite. Per Fightful Select, numerous talents have said that they have been told that Malakai Black is done with the company for the foreseeable future, with many saying that he got the release that he had asked Tony Khan for. It looks like the House of Black is no more. Now it's just the House. AEW sources claim the release is highly conditional, which I have to assume means that he will not be allowed to sign with WWE or any other company that, you know, look, he's got 4 years left on a 5-year contract. 4 years left on a 5-year deal. This release was, if he was ever going to get it, wasn't going to be anything other than conditional. The belief is that he asked out because of a personal issue that he is dealing with right now, separate and apart from pro wrestling. If that's the case, then it makes sense to let him go for now with the hope that, you know, when and if things resolve, he might want to come back to AEW. They might still be able to work things out later on when he's in a better place. Or maybe he leaves wrestling altogether and never comes back, but I don't believe for a second that we have seen the last of him in a ring. He's already pulled himself off an independent show in Ohio that was set for this past Friday due to what the promotion said were health reasons. You know, physical or mental, that we don't know. If it's a mental health issue, then it's nobody's business but his own. That's between him and Tony Khan. So the House of Black is no more. It's going to be Brody King and Buddy Matthews, I guess, as a tag team with Julia Hart as their manager. I don't know if they're going to add a new member or not. It's just the House now. It's the House. If the Skyscrapers and the Wall were still around, you would have a faction that Bob Vila would be very proud of. Maybe he could even manage them. And Chris Statlander underwent surgery for a torn ACL this week and a series of smaller fractures to her knee. That'll keep her out at least 6 months, maybe as many as nine, just like CM Punk. She is coming off another torn ACL. She had just come back not too long ago from a torn ACL in the other knee. And a push that likely would have seen her take the TBS title, I believe, and it's what I would have done, from Jade Cargill. So that's out the window now. And with Jade beating Athena at All Out, I mean, they could rematch them at Arthur Ashe. I mean, this time maybe have the baddies banned from ringside. They could always change the title there. You know, she beat Athena, and it didn't really take a lot. She beat her in 4 minutes. I think that pretty much takes care of Athena as far as going after the TBS title is concerned. At this rate, you know, I would just wait until they get her record close to 50-0. She's 37-0 right now. Unless they start, you know, lying and padding the numbers like WCW started doing with Goldberg, which I would not advise doing. It'll take a little while to get her up closer to 50-0. When she's just about there, that's when you have somebody beat her. When she gets to 49-0, that's when you have somebody swoop in and finally beat her. And right now, there's no clear answer who that someone would be. The recommendation that I made, and I was actually very surprised by the reaction I got on social media. There were people who agreed with me, but I've been getting tweets now for 4 days from people. I don't even know who these people are. They don't follow me. Somebody must have shared it. Now all these people are chiming in with opinions that I cannot give a shit about. And they're chiming in saying, oh, this is stupid. This is dumb. No, you got to wait. You got to wait for Chris Statlander to come back. No. We don't need another 9 months of Jade Cargill beating random people and holding on to the TBS title. I would have picked Chris Statlander. Chris Statlander got hurt. She's going to be gone for a long time. It sucks, but it is what it is. You move on. And so instead of Chris Statlander, I would go with Jamie Hayter. Clearly, they are working towards a split, finally, with her and Britt Baker. They are probably going to want to keep the interim women's title on Toni Storm until Thunder Rosa comes back, and then her and Thunder will unify the titles. Hayter's another one, like Statlander. She's an AEW original who I think could get over very big with their audience. She already is. She was getting more cheers than anybody else in the four-way at All Out. Even more than Toni Storm. And the timing is perfect. It's gonna be a little while before Jade gets to that 49-0 record. Could be a few months. Could be 2 months. Could be 3 months. Who knows? Maybe it all goes down to full gear in November. But when you get closer, by that point, in theory, Hayter will have already had her match with Britt Baker. She will have already beaten Britt Baker. If I'm booking this, she will have already beaten Britt Baker. And now the two of them come together. You build her up, and Jamie Hayter is the one to take that TBS title from Jade and dethrone her. That is what I think they should do. Pat McAfee. Switch over to WWE here. Pat McAfee was off SmackDown this week and is going to remain off of SmackDown through the end of the year as he has taken a new gig as a full-time member of ESPN's College Game Day, which airs on Saturday mornings throughout the college football season. His first show was yesterday. There he was. Right in the middle, next to Lee Corso. You watch, he'll probably end up replacing Lee Corso. He's getting up there in years. McAfee on his show talked about wanting to make both things work. He wanted to do both. Keep doing WWE and do College Game Day, and just because they're back-to-back days. I mean, SmackDown's on Friday, this show's on Saturday, so he'd be traveling and flying back and forth. So he talked about wanting to try to make both of these things work, and even WWE told him, look, dude, like, that would be insane. Go away, do what you need to do. We give you our blessing. When you're done in a few months, you come back and we'll put you right back on SmackDown where you were before, right next to Michael Cole on Friday nights. He just signed a multi-year contract extension with WWE in July, so he's not going anywhere. In the meantime, Corey Graves is going to replace him, which is the safe choice. I was worried they might bring back JBL, so it could always be worse. It could always be worse. You know, when JBL came back, because he had left the company for a while, but he came back after a few years, and he was back with, you know, Michael Cole, and I remember thinking initially when he came back, like, man, this is a really good pairing. I was really enjoying Cole and JBL. And JBL, though, when you listen to him long enough, and this is what happened after a few years, he became so grating and so distracting, and he was constantly cutting off Cole and all. it just, it was almost like it flipped, like it did a complete 180, and I couldn't stand listening to the guy's voice anymore. So yes, it could always be worse. They could always bring back JBL for this spot. Thankfully, they did not do that. They could have slid Wade Barrett over from NXT. They could have used Nigel McGuinness in the spot, who does the commentary for their Level Up show. Cole and McGuinness actually worked great together when they did that UK tournament years ago, when they were first establishing the United Kingdom Championship. But I guess if Pat's coming back in a few months, I guess why break in somebody new in the spot? So I guess there goes the Pat McAfee-Corey Graves match at Survivor Series. Raw versus SmackDown that I thought we might get this year. Next year's Royal Rumble is returning to San Antonio, Texas for the fourth time and returning to the Alamo Dome for the third time on Saturday, January 28th. The Alamo Dome is celebrating its 30th anniversary next year. The first one there was in 1997. They brought in stars from AAA for that show, I guess to try to sell some extra tickets in the local market. The 2007 show was not at the Alamo Dome, but it is memorable for the finish. One of the greatest Royal Rumble finishes of all time when it came down to Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. And they had that great last man standing match for the title with John Cena and Umaga. And the Rumble in 2017 saw Randy Orton win and John Cena win his 16th world title from AJ Styles. That was the end of their great trilogy of matches. That's when he tied Ric Flair's supposed record of 16 world titles. So this breaks the 10-year cycle between San Antonio Rumbles. They should have waited. They should have waited until 2027. I guess they didn't want to wait. I wouldn't be surprised if they start bidding, having bidding processes for all these shows. Right now, it's the bidding process for WrestleMania. Cities will bid. That's how they choose their host city for WrestleMania. I wouldn't be shocked if we start seeing it with the Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. They'll just have all these cities do the bidding. Kick in some tax breaks. Why not? Right? If they want WWE to come to their city and they're willing to pay and they're willing to throw in some things to sweeten up the deal, why not? That's what's going to end up happening. Becky Lynch, who is expected to be back on TV very soon, talked to Ryan Satin on his out-of-character show for Fox Sports, and he revealed, or she revealed, that it was Triple H's idea to turn her back babyface. She was asked if she was surprised by the move, and this is what she said. No, because I had talked to Hunter a little bit before, and he was like, how do you feel about being a heel? And I was like, honestly, it's fun. I like it. I feel like maybe I'm more naturally inclined to be a babyface. I think people like me better as a babyface, but it's fun. So Triple H responded and said, I feel like we're swimming upstream, keeping you as a heel. And she said that she agreed, and so then the creative was laid out for her, and she was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. It's good to know there's at least one person with a brain there. Speaking of brains and taking care of them, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I know we have a lot of sports fans who listen to this show. The NFL season is underway. Postseason baseball is almost here. The less said about the Mets right now, the better. We've got the U.S. Open, all these things going on. More and more athletes are speaking out about the importance of mental health. But you don't need to be a pro athlete to take care of your mental well-being. Therapy is one of the best ways to stay in peak mental shape. I got an email from a listener recently. He's a military man. I read it on the podcast last week, thanking me for telling him about BetterHelp and how quickly he was able to connect to a therapist. He took that first step to address his mental health, and I want you to consider doing the same. I've used their service as well, and it was even easier than I expected. I got some great advice about my sleeping habits and was sleeping better than I have in a very long time, at least until this week, with all of this news keeping me up into the wee hours. But it could also help you unload stress or deal with anxiety and depression. It's convenient, it's affordable, it's entirely online. You don't have to travel anywhere. You can do it from the comfort of your own home. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option to consider. When you're ready to feel at the top of your mental health game, therapy can help get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. Braun Strowman made his return on Raw Monday night in the most Vince McMahon way possible, laying waste to, I'd say, about 85% of the tag team division in this company. He did something similar 3 years ago when he single-handedly destroyed the Raw and SmackDown tag team champions. Even more impressive. So he clearly has some sort of deep-rooted hatred for tag teams. I think the whole Nicholas fiasco is to blame. He was back on SmackDown again Friday night to beat up Chad Gable and Otis. He powerbombed both of them. It got over huge, especially him powerbombing Otis. That's how you push Braun Strowman, though. You just have him go out and destroy things and people. If he was going to go out there and beat a bunch of people up, I would have rather have been the 24/7 Brigade, which has not been seen since Triple H took over. So you might say, well, Solomonster, why would you want to see the 24/7 people out there? Isn't that what you've been arguing against? Yes, except Dana Brooke is still carrying around the 24/7 title. So he would have made a fan in me for life if they would have sent out the parade of idiots one final time, send Braun out to kill them all, and then have him rip the 24/7 title in half. Right down the middle. Remember when Layla and Michelle McCool, they kind of ripped the women's title in half? Do the exact same thing with the 24/7 title. Just kill it. Once and for all. He's listed internally as a member of the SmackDown roster going forward. I could easily see him set up as a challenger for Roman Reigns, either later this year or maybe even at the Royal Rumble. The two of them had a famous feud, put Strowman on the map. Those were the first truly great matches of his career. One of the great Raw moments of all time, one of the great Raw moments at least of the last decade, was him throwing one of the announcer chairs at Roman's head and the way Roman sold it. It was fantastic. Speaking of Roman Reigns, he is not scheduled to wrestle on the Extreme Rules pay-per-view next month. His next title defense will likely be the next Saudi show in November. I think it might be November 5th. Could be Drew McIntyre. Could be a triple threat with McIntyre and Karrion Kross. Could be Kevin Owens. Or it could be Seth Rollins. And Rollins is the name that I would watch, because November is the 10-year anniversary of the debut of The Shield at Survivor Series in 2012. I would make the case for a Roman Reigns-Seth Rollins match at Survivor Series. And there's a story idea that somebody else pitched online that has been floating around for the past week that would be a great way to split the titles, which would see the two of them in a ladder match where Rollins pulls down the WWE title. At the same time, Roman pulls down the Universal title. Rollins then takes the WWE title back to Raw. Roman gets to keep his 700-plus day reign as Universal Champion going, all without taking a pinfall loss. And then when Cody Rhodes comes back, he can chase after Rollins for the WWE title, since Rollins is the guy who attacked him the last time we saw him on TV. Attacked him with a sledgehammer. It really is the perfect way to split the titles while protecting Roman, and it keeps with the theme that no matter what he does or how hard he tries, Roman Reigns cannot beat Seth Rollins. He cannot figure this guy out. The only sure things in life are death, taxes, and Roman Reigns not being able to beat Seth Rollins. I like that idea a lot. The only thing I would like better is the bloodline on one side of a War Games match at Survivor Series. I like that better. But if they don't do that, then I think the Rollins and Reigns idea is perfect. But Roman Reigns is going to be the champion, at least the Universal Champion, for a while yet. There are other reports this week that WWE is forging ahead with Vince McMahon's vision for what they had in mind for Roman Reigns. Triple H is going to continue on that path. They want Roman to be this legendary champion who reigns for an extended period of time, even longer than he's already had the title. I don't know what that means. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they'll have him as champion for 3 years. If they split the titles, they could do whatever they want with the WWE title and Cody and anybody else. That would just allow them to keep the other belt on Roman for another year, 2 years, 5 years, shit. He could hold it until the day he retires. I don't know how long they plan on keeping this championship on this guy, but apparently they want him to have a very Hogan-esque run as the champion. They want to establish him as somebody who would be on people's Mount Rushmore. And I put that question to you, by the way, because I got that question from somebody this week. They asked me, where does Roman Reigns fit on my Mount Rushmore? Is he like the top face? Is he number four? I said, he doesn't even sniff my Mount Rushmore. It's way too soon to be asking questions about Roman Reigns, I think, being on people's Mount Rushmore. Now, if you are a newer fan, if you are a younger fan, you're more likely to have John Cena on there, maybe a Randy Orton. And yes, Roman Reigns is going to end up being that guy, you know, the way that a Hulk Hogan or a Ric Flair or a Randy Savage might be for, you know, people from my generation or whoever you want to put on there. Some people would have Sting. Some people would have Bret Hart. Some people would have Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Undertaker. Where does Roman Reigns fit? I have a sense I already know what the answer is going to be. I mean, just because he's had this long title run over these last 2 years, does that really earn him that kind of spot? Because to me, it's way too premature to even be thinking about that. But I pose the question to you. Where does Roman Reigns sit on your Mount Rushmore? Is he even on there? Dominic Mysterio has joined the Judgment Day. And we weren't sure about this coming out of Clash at the Castle. He turned heel, but he didn't leave with the Judgment Day. But he is part of the Judgment Day. We still don't know why. He did not cut a promo on Raw Monday night. They have not explained it other than, I guess, he's got a thing for Rhea Ripley. And I can totally see why. But it sure would be nice. At some point, he's going to have to explain why. We're going to need that promo from him. What made you join after months of getting your ass kicked by them? Is it just a simple case of if you can't beat them, join them? We're still left wondering. He wrestles Edge on Raw tomorrow night. And if you missed it, there was a fun trios match to open SmackDown Friday night with Sheamus, Ridge Holland, and Pete Dunne taking on Imperium. They kept teasing another confrontation between Sheamus and Walter, and the crowd was totally into it. When Sheamus hot-tagged into the match, they went crazy. Imperium got the win, but I think they should run it back again at Extreme Rules. This time, do it under Street Fight rules. Brawling Brutes, Imperium, 3-on-3, Street Fight, Extreme Rules. And after that, I would keep Sheamus and Walter apart for a while. I would keep them apart until the Royal Rumble. And in the Royal Rumble match, one can eliminate the other, or they could eliminate each other. And then they meet again at WrestleMania, this time with Sheamus being the man to take the Intercontinental title from Walter. I think that would be the perfect time to do it. It also gives Walter several more months as the champion before he finally loses. Sheamus has been on television since 2009. And in his very first year, only his first, I don't know, five or six months on television, he already beat John Cena to become WWE champion. He beat him in that tables match. So that's how far back Sheamus has been around for. He's been around a long time. He's been there forever. 44 years old now, with spinal stenosis. And he still goes out there and he delivers. He delivers every single time. Give the man his moment at WrestleMania. LA Knight. This put a smile on my face. LA Knight is on his way back. Finally. Thank you, Triple H. There's Rambo again, running into the prison camp to rescue another hostage. After the Maximum Male Midcarders and Los Lotharios lost to Hit Row and the Street Profits on SmackDown, Max Dupree was in the back. He was giving the Male Midcarters a pep talk after the show was over. This was a digital exclusive. This did not air on TV. And he explained to them that he has learned in life, you have to go through the day to get to the night. And when he said the word night, he kind of looked off into the distance. He looked like he had this great eureka moment, and he said, yeah. And he walked off. So it looks like it's happening. LA Knight is on his way back. Another career saved. Let us hope. He could be a big player for them, heel or babyface. I've been saying it for the longest time, but the male models are an opening match act. That's what they are. And there's always a place on the show for an opening match act. He deserves better. He is better than being an opening match act. Other news and notes. Been a lot of news this week. Last week, I gave you the update on Velveteen Dream. Patrick Clark, who got arrested twice in 1 week. We now have more information about what led to his latest arrest and the real reason that he may have been released by WWE. It may have had less to do with those allegations against him, since WWE claimed they investigated them and they found nothing. EC3 shared a story this week that apparently was known to WWE at the time, and now it makes a lot more sense. It just goes from bad to worse with this guy. According to police documents obtained by TMZ Sports, Dream exploded on a gym employee, punching the man in the face and then biting him. What is with the fucking biting this week? The incident allegedly happened on August 20th at Club Orlando, a fitness facility in Orlando, Florida. Cops say that a senior employee at the gym told them that an altercation between him and Velveteen Dream began after he told the wrestler to leave an area that was closed for cleaning. The man claimed that Dream went off on him. He became irate and argumentative. Things got so intense, the gym employee told Clark that he had to leave the building. And Clark then made threats to kill the employee before he hit the guy in the face. Cops say the gym employee told them that the two then got into a fight where Clark bit him. The two were then separated by another employee. Officers arrested Clark after they observed teeth marks on the employee's left chest near the left armpit. So, unless the guy bit himself on the armpit, this doesn't sound good for Velveteen Dream. Court documents show that Clark has since been charged with two misdemeanors, battery and trespassing on property, after a warning over the incident. 6 days later is when he was arrested on a warrant for violating his probation. Now, this comes out the same week that EC3 gave an interview on the SportsKita site where he accused Clark of setting up a camera in his bathroom, in EC3's bathroom, during a party, so that he could film people as they relieved themselves. This is a story that was a long-standing rumor. Sean Ross Sapp is one person who admitted that he had heard this story years ago, but he could never get it confirmed until now. This is what EC3 said. We had a party, and it was at my place, and he came over because I'm being friendly, and I tried to welcome everybody into the thing. He left his phone in my bathroom with the camera on, trying to capture people taking pisses. When asked how he knew that this was happening, he said, because it's my bathroom. When I walk in there and I see a phone, selfie style, propped up on and filming, where if somebody is going to take a pee, they would have their phallus out urinating into the water. He said that he grabbed the phone, he deleted the pee video, put the phone back so it wouldn't look like anybody disturbed it. He left the bathroom, he took a seat on his couch, and he watched. It's like a cop on a stakeout. And he watched and he waited to see if Dream would go back into the bathroom. Sure enough, he goes back in, he comes out, EC3 goes back into the bathroom, and the phone is gone. And at that point, he said he didn't confront Clark about it because he didn't want to cause a scene. And he admitted that other people may have been doing some things in that bathroom throughout the night that they should not have been doing. He told everybody to leave because he was going to bed. He said later on he told other people who were there what had happened so that they were at least aware. And one of those people, because think about it, right? I mean, if you're EC3 and you're putting on this, you're hosting this party in your own house, people have been going in and out of that bathroom all night long, which means that if you saw it, somebody else may have seen that phone in there recording. Now, why they wouldn't have said anything, I don't know, but they may think, boy, this guy's a fucking freak, this EC3. He invites us over to his house. He's recording us taking a piss. So, yeah, I would want to tell people also, hey, look, guys, it wasn't me. Here's what happened here. So he tells some of the people there what happened. And one of those people was friends with Clark, which caused issues between the two of them. That's crazy enough. But he pointed out that they worked a short program together not long after this, which led to a match at one of the Brooklyn Takeover shows. This would have been in 2018. And EC3 got horribly concussed. About 3 minutes into the match, if you go back and watch, Dream just drilled him into the ramp head first on a DDT. And he sunk that thing in deep. And immediately, EC3 grabs his head. And he says he was out of it for the rest of the match. Ended up getting, you know, called up to the main roster not long after this when he was still concussed. Ended up suffering another concussion. Everything about that main roster call-up was just absolutely ridiculous. The implication, though, is that Dream drilled him hard the way he did on purpose to get back at him for telling people what he had done. And look, it does look reckless. Again, you go back and look at that DDT, it does look reckless, but there's no way to prove that Dream was trying to actually hurt the guy on purpose. It may be true, it may not be true. You have no way of proving that unless he admits it. But man, anybody who thinks that Velveteen Dream got a raw deal on all the grooming accusations, and it's still up for debate how much of a victim he really was and all of that. Even if you take that out, there were other things that tainted this guy behind the scenes, even before all of that stuff, to where I'm not surprised that people there weren't quick to stick up for him when all that shit went down. You didn't see people racing to defend the Velveteen Dream. Now you know why. He didn't seem to have a lot of fans behind the scenes. I get the sense they were happy to see him gone for a lot of different reasons. He will not be back in WWE, but he's got bigger problems in his life to deal with right now than trying to resurrect his wrestling career. Velveteen Dream isn't the only one in trouble with the law lately. Devin Nicholson, who also goes by the wrestling name Hannibal, The Hannibal TV is his YouTube channel. He's posted lots of wrestler interviews over the years. He's got the personality of a fucking doorknob when he does them, but he's done a lot of interviews. He has a trial date in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, set for October 12th on charges of assaulting a woman last month. This, according to Mike Johnson of PW Insider. Nicholson had been behind bars since his arrest. He went before the court this week for a bail hearing. He has been released under the supervision of his parents and is required to either stay with them or make contact with them on a daily basis. And he has been ordered to have no contact with the victim and has to abide by a nightly curfew. The last time I talked about Hannibal was last year when he bloodied up that referee at that indie show in Texas with that spike. One of the most sickening things I have ever seen. And the promoter claimed that Nicholson went into business for himself, he would never return to the promotion, and he hasn't. I said it at the time, I don't think he should be allowed to wrestle anywhere after that. He should have been blackballed from the business. No one in their right mind should ever want to work with this guy again or trust their body with him after what he did. Now, I've mentioned a few anniversaries this week. I mentioned the fact that it was 10 years ago that Jerry Lawler had the heart attack, and I mentioned that it was 1 year ago this week that Mick Foley posted that video on Facebook. It was also 1 year ago this week, September 14th, 2021 to be exact, NXT was rebranded and relaunched as NXT 2.0. Triple H's black and gold brand was dismantled, gone were the skulls and the darker look, replaced by bright lights and rainbow colors, no more Poppy. Poppy was gone. Takeover became a thing of the past, and they took the brand back to its developmental roots. They phased out the veterans for younger, more inexperienced talent. A lot of those older names were either phased out, or they were cut, or they opted to leave when their contracts expired, as was the case with Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano. I wasn't a fan of the change, you know, not because I didn't think they should be trying to create newer, younger stars, but because I didn't think it needed to be blown up as dramatically as it was. I mean, they took a couple of sticks of dynamite and they blew this thing to bits. I think there were ways to achieve what they wanted to do by keeping a mix of the veteran talent and the newer talent they could kind of weave into the show. And they obviously agreed because since then, we have seen them rotate main roster talent in and out of the show ever since then. Right, names like Dolph Ziggler, they put the NXT title on him. Dolph Ziggler became the NXT champion. We've seen AJ Styles on the show when he was feuding with Grayson Waller. We've seen Matt Riddle, Apollo Crews, Ricochet, Natty, among others. It was a change that was also, you know, born out of the fact that due to the pandemic, they were not running live event loops anymore down in Florida. Now they finally are. They finally have started those shows up again. But they weren't running live events. They would do them in front of 200 people, 400 people. And they didn't have that anymore. So the newer Talons were not getting any reps. They were just practicing at the PC. And you're only going to improve so much by lifting weights and, you know, riding the treadmill and practicing and doing rolls. So NXT as a television show, it's not as fun for me as it used to be. But here we are now 1 year in. And you can see some of the stars that they are going to be building around in the years to come. Bron Breakker showed up on that very first 2.0 episode. Didn't know who he was, but the moment he started talking, you knew right away that he was a Steiner. He had Steiner blood coursing through his veins. Wrestles like his father, sounds exactly like his uncle. It's the weirdest thing. Even if they refused to call him a Steiner, you knew he was a Steiner. He's a future champion in this company. So is Carmelo Hayes. He's been the biggest standout of them all, even more than Bron Breakker. Solo Sikoa, he picked things up quickly. He's already part of the bloodline. He just main evented on SmackDown the other night. Grayson Waller, he's developed into a good douchey heel, kind of like a version of The Miz. He can go in the ring. Toxic Attraction has been a good act. Mandy Rose has noticeably improved in the ring from her main roster days. The Creed brothers, they could benefit, I think, from spending a little more time down there, but they're going to make a great addition to the tag team division one day soon. Tiffany Stratton, she's been the standout for me on the female side. She has noticeably improved from even just a few months ago. After the top, I'd say, half a dozen names or so on that roster, you do notice a drop in quality. But that's what you get with developmental. It takes time to develop talent. They have tried to create new stars. They have had some success. 1 year in, I would give the show a B-. On my NXT report card, I would give, overall, I would give the show and the brand, I'd give them a B-. I think it's been a thumbs in the middle, leaning up. You know, I said a year ago on episode 722, I would keep an open mind about the show. I didn't just bash AI. I had a lot to say about them, you know, tearing down everything that Triple H had built up. But go back and on that episode, I did say that I'm going to keep an open mind about this show. And it has taken some growing pains, but it has found an identity of its own. And the best thing that ever happened to 2.0 had nothing to do with any of the changes that they made on the show. It's nothing that you can visually see. The best thing to happen to 2.0 didn't even happen until about 2 months ago. It was Triple H taking over creative on the main roster. Because now when they call these people up, they know that they're going to have a fighting chance to find success. It was the biggest knock on NXT that I had before Vince McMahon stepped down. You did not trust that when somebody got called up to Raw or called up to, or as I used to say, called down to Raw, called down to SmackDown, you couldn't fully trust that they were going to know what to do with them, that they were going to see anything in them, and that they were going to do right by them. And it just became a situation where, you know, or what they would be doing in NXT would be completely ignored when they would go to the main roster. And that made it very hard to care. Why invest in these people or in a television show if all you're going to be doing is disregarding all of it anyway? And that's one thing if you have a developmental system. Nobody is necessarily paying close attention to every little thing that happens there. You pluck them out, you do what you want with them, but it's a television show on USA Network every single week. You watch that television show just like you do Raw, just like you do SmackDown. They have storylines, they have characters. And to just completely ignore all of that, which is what they would do very, very often when they would call these people up, it made watching NXT, it rendered it basically pointless. That should no longer be an issue. Now there's going to be more of a synergy between the main roster and between NXT. You've got Triple H running creative on Raw and SmackDown. His best bud is running creative in NXT. They're going to work together. There's going to be a lot less of that going on in the future. And if you are an NXT talent and you get that phone call saying, hey, guess what? We need you at Raw this Monday, or we need you at SmackDown on Friday. You've got to be thinking, man, I'm glad I'm getting called up now and not 6 months ago. That could be the difference between me getting the push of my career, taking the ball and running with it, or getting my legs chopped out from underneath me. Big difference. That's the best thing to happen to 2.0. The best thing to happen to NXT was Triple H taking over creative on the main roster. Speaking of main roster talent working on Tuesdays, case in point, Nikki and Doudrop were back on NXT this week. They beat Toxic Attraction. As soon as I saw that, I figured they got to be calling up Gigi and JC. Sure enough, they were on SmackDown on Friday night. They lost, but they were on SmackDown on Friday night. Why else would they have a main roster team that loses all the time coming to NXT and beating their most established team? Unless they were calling them up. JC did potato Doudrop right in the face with a stiff kick that bloodied her up. That wasn't good. I really liked the match with Mako Satomura and Roxanne Perez. I thought it was one of the strongest women's TV matches we've seen in a very long time. Mako goes over. I don't know if she's sticking around in the U.S. or not. I hope she does. You know, one of the positives of NXT U.S. inheriting so much talent from NXT U.K. is that it's mostly experienced men and women. These aren't developmental talents. Tyler Bate is not a developmental talent. You know, Blair Davenport is not a developmental talent. These tag teams and Gallus and, you know, Jordan Devlin or JD McDonough, all these people they're calling up, these are not developmental talents. These are men and women who have a lot of experience, who are coming in many cases off the independent scene, many years of experience. So the quality of the matches has seen a noticeable improvement since they were added to the show. I would expect that to continue. Now for the one-year anniversary show this Tuesday, they've announced Pretty Deadly, defending their tag team titles against the Creed Brothers in a match where the fans will get to vote on the stipulation. Cameron Grimes and a mystery partner take on Tony D'Angelo and Stax. Hey, maybe the return of LA Knight is tied in with this. Maybe he returns to NXT for one night only to tag with his old rival. He's going to help out Cameron Grimes. And Carmelo Hayes defends the North American title against a challenger to be decided by fan vote. A lot of fan voting going on this Tuesday. You know what that means? Taboo Tuesday is back. Actually, if they're going to have the fans vote, are they having the fans vote on Grimes' mystery partner? If they're having the fans vote, then it won't be LA Knight. I don't remember offhand if that's going to be part of the fan vote. But yes, they are bringing back Taboo Tuesday. Maybe not under that name. But it is a Tuesday, and there will be lots of fan voting for the one-year anniversary show this week. All right, let's dive into your questions. I plucked out a whole bunch of them. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. Email me, include your name and where you are from when you do so. Otherwise, I may not be able to use your letter or your question. James Frazier, if WWE does get The Rock and you have The Rock and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, in January, WWE is doing day one again in Cody's hometown of Atlanta. How about they do Cody and Roman at day one and do the title change there to kick off 2023. First of all, we don't even know if Cody Rhodes is going to be back in time. We don't even know if he's going to be cleared to wrestle on January 1st. So that's number one. Number two, if they get The Rock to commit for WrestleMania, I would be okay with that. I would be okay with getting the titles off of Roman at day one, get them on to Cody, do Rock and Roman at WrestleMania for family pride or some shit. And Roman could win there. The more I read about them wanting Roman to have this just legendary run, makes me think that they don't have any plans of taking the championship or championships off of him until WrestleMania. And even if they do Rock and Roman at WrestleMania, Roman's going to win. So either he retains or it's a non-title match. I can't imagine them having the champion on the show non-title, but if they want to keep his reign going, maybe. Maybe that's what they do. I don't agree with that, but it's very possible. But we shouldn't assume that Cody is going to be cleared by January 1st. It's not a guarantee he'll be cleared by the Rumble. It's wishful thinking by everybody fantasy booking all this stuff out, but I don't know. Day one, it seems kind of dicey to me. Howard from Shenley, Hertfordshire, England. You mentioned on last week's podcast that if The Rock was going to be at WrestleMania, he would have to take a few months off to be on television and promote the match with whoever he chooses to face. Let me stop you there. I did not say that he was going to have to take months off. I just said that he's going to have to work other appearances into his schedule. A television show here, a television show there. It could only be two TVs. I didn't say that he has to take off months from his schedule to do that. He says that you say this, but last year when Steve Austin came, well, this year, when Steve Austin came back, he did not show up on any TVs in person. We know he did a video promo, and it was just left to Kevin Owens to promote the segment every single week. So what's stopping them from doing something like that again? Have his opponent, most likely Roman, and therefore Paul Heyman, promote the match each week on TV, leaving The Rock to do whatever he needs to do in the outside world, and then showing up for the match at WrestleMania just like Austin did. There's nothing to stop The Rock from doing a couple of promos on social media, but it is down to Roman and Paul Heyman to promote the match. What do you think? Could they do that? Yes. Do I think they will? Do I want them to do that? No. If The Rock is going to come back for one last match, The Rock is going to want to be on TV at least once. I can't imagine The Rock is going to agree to come back and want to come back and not want to come to TV to cut a Rock promo or to have that one face-to-face with Roman Reigns, like he did with John Cena when he had that face-to-face with Hogan when they had their icon versus icon match at WrestleMania 18. The Rock, I don't think The Rock is going to be happy just sending in a video promo. I think he'll want to be on TV at least once or twice. Where's the fun in bringing The Rock back if you're not going to get him back on TV for at least a couple of appearances? Joey from Melbourne, Australia. There have been many AEW Tag Team Championship matches that were arguably the best match on the card on an AEW pay-per-view. Omega and Paige against the Young Bucks against the Lucha Bros in a cage, and just recently Swerve and Our Glory against the Acclaimed. Do you think an AEW Tag Team title match could or should ever main event an AEW pay-per-view? Yes, if you have the right match for it. I see no reason why they couldn't do that. You've had FTR and the Briscoes. They just headlined a Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Had an incredible match. One of the best matches all year. When you have talents and tag teams on their roster, the quality of an FTR, or the Bucks, or, again, any of these teams, if you have the right story, if you have the right match, if it has been built up well enough, I think it's unlikely, because you're always going to have that big AEW world title match that you want to headline with. But with the right match, I would never sit here and say, oh, that'll never happen, or I would never do that. They have the talent to make it work. So yes, I think it is possible. David from Sacramento, I wanted your thoughts on Bianca Belair regarding her facial reactions. More times than not, she tends to show signs of marking out when something major happens. An understandable exception to the rule is right before her main event with Sasha Banks at WrestleMania, because that was two black women main eventing for the first time ever. But if you look back at, say, the return of Becky Lynch or Bayley, she looked more like, oh my god, one of my girls is back, instead of showing a sense of shock. I know she's a babyface, but it's like she suffers from Cena syndrome, where nothing seems to faze her. Teddy Long could book her to go one-on-one with The Undertaker, and she would still be excited to hear the news. A heel could cut a promo on her dead dog, and instead of rushing to the ring, she would probably come out dancing, smiling, and slapping her ass. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know anybody who smacks their ass when they find out their dog died, but yeah, I mean, there are moments. I mean, but she's no different than other people on the roster. I mean, it's hardly a Bianca Belair issue. You mentioned John Cena. He used to annoy me all the time when he would do that. She has fallen victim to the same thing. I don't see it as a Bianca Belair issue. I just see it as a WWE issue. I see it as more of a general issue. She's not the only one. You know, there are times where there are certain reactions, I think, that are warranted, and you don't get that reaction. But I don't see it as being any kind of a major problem with her. Zach from West Virginia, if hypothetically Tony Khan reached out to you and asked for your specific opinions about what kinds of content or features that you would like to see as part of a standalone AEW streaming service, what suggestions would you have and why? Also, what lessons are there to be learned from the WWE Network And what would you like to see AEW do similarly or differently? Well, the two things I like the most, well, three things. Three things I like the most about the WWE Network. Obviously, number one are the pay-per-views, because I don't have to pay $50 for each pay-per-view like I do for AEW. WWE has a lot more pay-per-views than they do, so that's good. The content that I watch the most, and I'm not on the network a lot, but when I do watch, I like the classic stuff. There's certain periods when it comes to the classic content that I enjoy. And I enjoy certain features they have, like the Broken Skull Sessions, Table for Three. They had that, oh my goodness, what was it? The Story Time. I like stuff like that. So with AEW, obviously they're going to want to get their classic stuff up there. Right now you don't really have any place to access it. So I think it'll be important to get that up, their first show and their past pay-per-views and the original Dynamites and all of that kind of stuff. But I think you also want to have, I don't know if reality shows is the right way to term it, but I think having certain features on there that do a better job of kind of focusing on the personality of their talent. Stuff that they don't have time to put on Dynamite, because that show, I mean, it moves so fast. It's like they're so afraid to put stuff on there that people are going to just tune out, that we don't have time for like long video packages and personality profiles or, you know, just stuff like that. I think it falls to YouTube, it falls to BTE and Sammy's vlog, and that's fine. But I think content like that on an AEW streaming service would make sense. I think having a podcast or some kind of feature like that, you know, you can host all the media scrums on there. Maybe you want to scrub the most recent one. I don't know. I mean, beyond that, again, their library is not as big as WWE's. I do think that Ring of Honor, if they're not going to be able to find a TV home for Ring of Honor, if all of a sudden, though, they had their own, like their own network, their own streaming service, then put the show on there. Tony Khan now owns the Ring of Honor library, so all of the classic Ring of Honor stuff should be on there, going back to 2002. So that right there could be a feature that people would be interested in. But if they can't get a TV deal for Ring of Honor, then you got to put a new Ring of Honor TV show on your streaming service. You can't keep having these Ring of Honor title matches on AEW television and expect people to really be able to invest and care about it. You need to have your own show for that with your own standalone stories. They barely have enough time to feature the AEW talent. They can't keep filling up shows with Ring of Honor segments. So Ring of Honor, I think, would have to be a very big component of whatever they put together there. So I think that would be a smart way to kind of kick things off. You know, for their audience, I do think, you know, ROH would be a draw for some of those fans. Not all of them, but for enough of them that it would at least give them a home. Colin from Santa Rosa, California. Over a year ago, I listened to a clip from Jim Ross's podcast where he talked about the events that led up to Steve Austin walking out of WWE. He mentioned one of the major factors was WrestleMania 18. Apparently, the original plan was for Austin to lose to Scott Hall, which is completely insane. It wasn't until the day of the show that JR and Pat Patterson were able to change Vince's mind to the correct outcome. Have you heard that story before? Why was the match at WrestleMania not Austin against Kevin Nash? Nash was the bigger star and better wrestler, and since he's friends with Austin, I think they would have had a very good match. Also, Hall was already in such bad shape, and Nash did not have a match, and instead had to be on standby in case Hall couldn't go. So then why book him in the first place? And lastly, can you name any other big matches where absolutely the wrong person was scheduled to go over, only for Vince to change his mind at the last minute? Let's take the NWO stuff first. The original plan, and Kevin Nash has talked about this, and it makes sense. They brought the NWO into the company, Hogan, Hall, and Nash. The idea was that the NWO would leave WrestleMania with heat, which is something you didn't see very often at WrestleMania. Usually it was the happy ending, but the idea was that Hall would beat Austin. I think Rock would beat Hogan, but then they would beat down Rock. and they would leave with heat. With the idea that you can get 6 to 12 months out of an NWO run in WWE. And look what they did. The NWO was fresh and brand new in that company. And in their very first pay-per-view in the ring, Austin beats Scott Hall, and The Rock beats Hulk Hogan. And then when the match is over, they have Hall and Nash turn on Hogan, and then Rock and Hogan team up to beat up Hall and Nash. So not only did they not leave with any heat, they left with the opposite of heat. They lost the biggest name in the entire faction. They lost their leader. It was down to Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. So they killed the NWO long before the NWO was disbanded in July. They were already dead. The NWO was already done. Hall beating Austin was the plan. I've heard the exact same thing. Now, why would they put Hall in the match and not Nash? I have to just imagine they thought it would be a better match. And Scott Hall was not a mess at the time. Nash tells the story that when Hall found out he was losing and he lost to Austin at WrestleMania, when they went back to the hotel that night, he saw Hall going into the hotel bar. And he says that he had been sober for a period of time up to that point, to the best of his knowledge. And his heart just sank when he saw that, because he knew what that meant. He saw him go into the bar. He's like, ah, shit. So if he is to be believed, Hall was back on the wagon during this period. Scott Hall, when he's on his A game, was very good. And, you know, he was a better wrestler than Kevin Nash. So if they thought that Hall had his act together, and I imagine they did or else they wouldn't have hired him, they said the best match to do is Austin and Hall. We'll have Kev there in case something goes sideways and Scott falls off and we need somebody. We always have Nash. But I think it was just a matter of they thought that would be the better match to do. As far as matches where the incorrect outcome was changed at the last minute, I think of a few matches. One of them that jumps in my head, I mean, this is not in any particular order, I think of The Shield. Right? I mentioned that this November is going to be the 10-year anniversary of The Shield. I think it was the second ever match they had together on pay-per-view, which was right before WrestleMania. They did The Shield against John Cena, Ryback, and Sheamus. They did it on the Elimination Chamber show. It was in 2013. And so that's only their second big match together as a group. And they were going to lose. The Shield was booked to lose in their second match. All three Shield guys went to Vince's office. They banded together. And they let him know why they thought that was a very stupid idea. And they were right. They would have become the new Nexus. Just like everybody else who ran into John Cena, they would have become the new, they would have nexused the Shield only a few months into their run. Once Cena beat the Nexus at SummerSlam, they were done. Same thing may well have happened to the Shield. They convinced Vince to change his mind. He says, you know what? You're right. And so they changed the finish. That was the right move to make. I think of the WrestleMania main event in 2015. Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns turned into a triple threat. Seth Rollins cashed in his money in the bank. I don't know how far in advance they had decided that they were going to do the cash-in on that show. Roman Reigns was going to go over. That's where the whole story comes from, that his father, you know, Sika, was not very happy. He was there in attendance thinking his son was probably going to win the world title. He was not very happy when that show was over. Rollins has always said that they pulled him into a room during the show. He had already wrestled Randy Orton and lost earlier in the night. Later on in the show, he got pulled into a room, I think, with Vince and maybe Heyman was in there and Michael Hayes, and they told him, hey, here's what we're going to do. Sounds pretty last minute to me. And that's one of the all-time most memorable WrestleMania finishes now. So those are two matches that come to mind. I'm sure there have been others, but those are two more recent examples of that happening. Jonathan from Chicago, I found out recently that there were two ideas for Dean Ambrose to debut on WWE TV before The Shield. One was for a feud with Mick Foley, where he was a deranged fan turned enemy who wanted to punish and hold Foley accountable for ruining a generation of fans turned wrestlers who wanted to be just like him and emulate his extreme style of wrestling. The other idea was for him to be paired with AJ Lee him being one of the patients that she met after being committed to a mental institution, where they would eventually escape together and wreak havoc on TV as a Bonnie and Clyde-esque duo. My question is, buy or sell on which idea you think is better and would have rather have seen for Ambrose if the Shield never happened. So we'll take the Foley idea first. Yes, I am aware of that idea. I have the video. It's probably on YouTube, but I remember I actually pulled it. I saved it. I have it on my computer somewhere. The video with Foley and Ambrose in the hotel lobby, WrestleMania 27 weekend, they started to shoot the angle. Ambrose confronted, he walked right up to him. It's just Foley in the lobby of the hotel. He's being swarmed by a small group of fans, and he's talking to them and signing autographs. And here comes Ambrose, right? I think he was in his leather jacket. He just kind of moseys on up. And he was a member of the FCW roster at the time. And he just started going off on Foley, you know, very quietly. He wasn't yelling or anything, but he got up in Foley's face. They did it in a very realistic way. And if you didn't know him from the indies, if you didn't, you know, watch FCW and how many people were watching FCW, you wouldn't even know who this guy was. You would think he was a fan. You would think he was a deranged fan. He walked right up to Foley and he started waging this campaign against him for influencing a whole generation of kids who were trying to emulate his hardcore style. And, you know, these kids are going out there and they're hurting themselves and you need to be held accountable. He kept saying that. And Foley got angry. He goes, what do you mean by that? He's like, what do you mean I need to be held accountable? It was done in a very realistic way. What happened, though, is that he brought Foley's family into it. And that legitimately upset Foley, who ended up calling the whole thing off. But Foley also met with a neurologist around that time, and the neurologist told him you should never be wrestling ever again. So even if Foley didn't get upset about what Ambrose was, he went too far. It probably wasn't going to go anywhere anyway. On the second idea, it was Kevin Eck. Kevin Eck was the writer who made the pitch. It was around the time that AJ and Daniel Bryan were about to be married. They had that wedding ceremony on TV. The idea is that Bryan would have her committed after that to a mental institution. And when she came back, she would have her new boyfriend with her that she met on the inside. And it would be Ambrose. And they would be, again, like a modern-day Bonnie and Clyde or, you know, Mickey and Mallory from the movie Natural Born Thrillers, which actually sounds like an amazing idea that could have worked. But Vince McMahon chose to make AJ the Raw GM instead. That's when AJ Lee became the new Raw General Manager. I got to tell you, the Foley idea had potential, but I would totally buy on that second idea more. I think that idea is the one that intrigues me more. I think that definitely could have worked. Keep sending those questions on in. I love hearing from you guys. TheSolemonster@gmail.com. Conjuring up all kinds of memories this week. Follow me on Twitter @Solemonster. And do subscribe to the YouTube channel. We are just about at 71,000 subs. We're almost there. We need about 100 more. So go ahead and subscribe. You could also become a channel member while you are there. I will be live after Raw Monday night and Dynamite on Wednesday, which is all of a sudden a big show this week with world title implications. And then Dynamite, SmackDown and Rampage on Friday, live on YouTube, and back here next Sunday for episode 774 of one of the longest running wrestling podcasts in the entire world. Solemonster sounds off, and that's all because of you guys. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. I will see you back here for 774 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solemonster sounds off.
We had Butch taking on Ludwig Kaiser. So Butch targeted the fingers of Kaiser. Kaiser rolled to the floor. Kaiser rolled. Oh, I just popped myself. Kaiser roll. I fucking love it. I'm going to take a drink of that. Sometimes it's the little things that amuse me the most. Oh, man. Kaiser rolled to the floor. I promise you, Sean, I was not. I didn't have that in my back pocket. I was not waiting for the rim shot. Sometimes these things just come together in a perfect way.
The Solemonster sounds off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow The Solemonster on Twitter @Solemonster.
Solo Monster.
Solo Monster.
Solo Monster sounds off.